Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, what is interoperability? Well, Robbie Green and Chris Tarr are both contributing on this episode. We're going to find out about how to make things work together that weren't really designed to work together, but they may speak enough of a common dialect to get them to work together, reducing your overall difficulty in installing and maintaining. That's coming up next on TWRT. This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support, online at nautel.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts. Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where we talk about everything from the microphone to that light bulb at the top of the tower. I'm Kirk Harnack, so delighted to be here with you on what's been a rainy day here in Nashville, Tennessee, with a few thunderstorms and rain, but it's getting better now. I'm in the Telos Alliance studio here in Nashville. Thanks a lot to my employer, Telos Alliance, for giving me an hour and a half or so on Thursdays to do this show, bring in some guests, bring in my co-host Chris Tarr, and have a good time talking about broadcast engineering, particularly in the radio realm. And with that, let's bring in my co-host, Chris Tarr. Hey, Chris, good to see you.
Howdy, howdy, howdy. Good to be seen. One of my rare days where I'm not crammed with a bunch of stuff to do before the show. So I was able to relax a little bit. This time I showered long before, unlike last week where I came down here with the bathrobe on, ready to go. Things are good. It's hotter than heck up here. You know, people who say, well, you know, you live up north, boy, it must be cold. Well, this year, I'm kind of getting my comeuppance with that. I mean, it's hot, but it's not nearly as warm as it is going south. So we're in the 80s today, nice and sunny, and it's nice being up north.
Yes, we've had a couple of days. Of course, we had some thunderstorm days and cold fronts come through in the last week, but we've actually had a couple of days that were pleasant. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I said we had, I think it was last weekend, this past weekend, we had some pretty bad storms come through. Out of 20-some stations, I only had, I think, two or three go off and got them right back on. So that was good. I was very happy about that. But, boy, you bite your fingernails when that happens, you know, when those storms roll through like that. We had trees down everywhere, branches, straight line winds. You know, you always got to worry, am I going to lose a tower? Am I going to lose, you know, I had two sites that had no power for almost a day and a half. So it's pretty crazy up here. Now, it's nothing like, you know, like those hurricanes or anything like that. But for Midwest, that's unusual. So it was nail biting for a couple of days there.
It's interesting what happens when thunderstorms come through and new things break, you know, sometimes. I mean, you know, the same old tree can't fall over and over again. So it's always something new that happens. Right. And few nights ago, I was driving home with my wife after the Tennessee Radio Hall of Fame event, and we ran over a downed power line. Couldn't see it. You know why we couldn't see it? I was looking for it. You know why? Because the fire trucks were right there, and all their lights were blaring and reflecting off the water on the ground, and you couldn't see the thing. I was actually looking at the ground. Is there anything on the ground? Is there anything on the ground? Is there anything on the ground? And the next thing I heard was under my car. Ran over the power line, and I ran over the end of it, and it picked up in my car wheel. And so then we sat there for the next hour while Nashville Electric came out and said, oh, it's dead. And then the police came out and said, oh, we can't do anything except just cut it. You'll have to get a tow truck. So I was a mile from home. We drove home, and the next morning I just, you know, unhooked it from the underneath of the BMW.
Jeez. So. Wow. That's crazy.
I know. Such is life. We should introduce our guest. He may have a crazy story or two during the next hour. Robbie Green is here, and I'm so delighted. I've called Robbie a friend for years now, and now I get to call him a colleague. Hello, Robbie Green. Welcome in.
Hey Kirk. Glad to be talking to you, especially after the power line incident there. I was, I think Chris's eyes got really wide during that, and I'm sure mine did too.
I was thinking of your tire becoming an inductor with the power line around it. Good way to charge your car.
Yeah, if I had a Tesla, it could be good. It didn't work out that way, though. And I was going to say about all these thunderstorms, you know, I used to do TV weather. I don't have the body for it anymore, so I don't, apparently. But, you know, whenever that dew point and you know, we're engineers. We're not necessarily all meteorologists, and plenty of engineers. Several of you guys are way better at meteorology than I am, even though I got a kind of a degree in it. But you got to watch that dew point. Oh, my goodness. The dew point goes over 70. And the atmosphere can get pretty juicy and pretty active. So we've had a number of days here where the dew point's been up around in the mid 70s. And those are the days when the atmosphere just wants to turn over and equalize itself. And in the process, dump a bunch of rain and Thor comes out and, you know, spreads lightning everywhere. And those downdrafts occur. So if you're watching weather, look at that dew point. That's a good key indicator. If it's low, you're going to have a nice day. If it's high, your hair's not going to do well. So, Robbie, I'm glad to have you with us. And I'm glad you and Chris are on the same show here. Our topic is interoperability. And we're going to get into the meat and potatoes of it in just a minute. But Robbie, kind of give us a little preview. What kind of interoperability are you talking about? XLR connectors or something a little bit more sophisticated?
No, I'm definitely talking about something a little bit more sophisticated. You know, more or less the concept of being able to control multiple different devices inside a broadcast facility or even outside a broadcast facility simply with commands from a, you know, from a machine, you know, somewhere on the network, you know, things like that, as opposed to having to hardwire things, you know, with GPIO or whatever, the way we traditionally did things, to make life a little bit easier and more manageable, you know, nowadays, since things tend to turn over and change pretty quickly. A lot easier to do it with keystrokes than wire.
Well, and I think Chris Tarr's got a huge amount of experience in this, especially in the world of SNMP, which many, many devices speak that nowadays. We're going to get into all the things that you're talking about. We've got a whole laundry list of little topics that we can hit and see how things can work together and make our lives more convenient. Instead of having literally dozens of different systems that all operate differently, maybe we can have some commonality among those things. Our show is brought to you in part by Nautel. And Nautel, they've been doing Transmission Talk Tuesdays this summer. The next one, not sure when it's scheduled. We'll apprise you of that right here. So be listening every week right here. We'll tell you when. But the thing I want to mention is HD radio from Nautel. You know, people are not done installing HD radio. More and more stations are putting it in. Many times, for the benefit of feeding an FM translator. Since that's the way that you know, commercial stations need to feed FM translators, you know, with an HD2 or an HD3, and that is one of my plans in the coming months or years. But to do that, we're putting an HD radio, and I am putting in some Nautel HD radio equipment this coming weekend in Oxford, Mississippi, home of Ole Miss University. Chris and Robbie, we have just received at the station a Nautel HD Multicast Plus. And the FM HD Exciter that Nautel has. In fact, there's Suncast showing us the page there. That Multicast Plus that you see at the top box there with the green word Multicast. And then that HD Exciter, let's see, is that the silver box that we got? I haven't seen it yet. It's still in the box.
Sir.
Okay. So apparently we have a Nautel VS 2.5 FM Exciter, and apparently we're going to disable its internal FM analog exciter, and there's a port on the back into which it even it's labeled VSHD exciter. It goes here. Chris, what am I looking at connecting with these things? I've got AES EBU digital for my HD1, HD2, HD3. They're all processed. They're coming out of Telus Alliance X node, and they're on AES EBU digital. What am I going to hook up this stuff? How am I going to do that?
It's actually pretty simple. They have depending on the model, a Lynx audio card, multi-channel. So you go 1, 2, 3, and you bring up the mixer, you bring up make sure the audio levels are set. And then inside you've got the encoders for each channel, the SPS encoders, and you just select which input you want for each encoder for each channel and you start it. And you're good to go. And then, you know, what you want to do, obviously, is set your RDS or pad data encoder for the ports for each HD channel. And then you can get dive mm-hmm. even deeper if you're doing artist experience and things like that and get the pictures going, or at least the logo, which is really easy to do. If you just want to do a logo, there's really no extra software you need to do that. There's a place which you can upload your logo and everything, and it'll actually put that logo out there on your multicast channels. The other thing I wanted to mention is some of the things coming up. One of the things I'll be talking about in Nashville here at the Next Dennis Workshop with EAS is, now this started a few years ago, it really hasn't picked up yet, but to be able to do expanded EAS messages on HD radios. And it's going to get to the point where we're going to be able to send, like, you know, maps, radar maps and things like that over the HD channel to show up on your display. So, you know, not only is HD picking up for things like feeding translators and things like that, but, you know, the other thing with Nautel has been working very closely with, you know, Xperia and some of these other companies to really make it easy to get expanded song information on the HD2 and HD3. And the Xporter Plus is a fantastic, fantastic device. I have them on a couple of my stations. They're bulletproof. They just run and run and run. They're Windows machines, but then they've, you know, they're a very special flavor on server hardware. And I really have not had, and I've had one going now for almost 2 years, haven't had a single issue with it. So I think you'll find it's easy to set up and they run well. And, you know, there's a little bit of a learning curve, but not too much. And Nautel support is fantastic with that. So
good. And I've got your phone number too. So if I get stuck this weekend.
No, you don't. I just changed it.
Okay.
I'm
blacklisted on your phone now. I get it. No, I'll call Nautel if I need something. But Nautel does this wonderful job, and they make this multicast plus, which is going to make things so easy for me to install. And I'll give a complete report for you next week, and I'll see if I can have screenshots from the car radio with you know, pictures of the, we have three different stations, so, you know, station logos and all that kind of stuff. Now I'm committed. I gotta get it going this weekend, so we'll see. All right, thanks a lot, Nautel, for sponsoring this week in Radio Tech, and thank you for making these amazing HD devices that make our life easier. And I know that Nautel has put a lot of engineering work into making HD work even better than it was originally designed, and make it work, you know, over IP connections, even better than it was originally designed. They've done a lot of work in that regard. So thanks a lot. All right. Robbie Green is our guest today, talking about interoperability. Robbie, we have a wealth of topics here to talk about, examples and so forth. I'm not sure, good golly, where you want to start. I mean, I sent out an email with covering a lot of it. One thing we could start with is, Robbie, your idea about the software that's being used to produce this very show. And that's,
well, actually,
VMix.
That's a great starting point. I was going to point out, actually, you know, from what Chris was saying about the HD weather alerts and everything. And this is an interoperability topic. Years ago, and I don't know if you can see this little guy right here. Yeah. I'm holding it up in front of my face. I participated in some really early testing with what was at the time, I think, Ubiquiti. It might have been before they became Xperi. For the HD, you know, alerts and everything. And we actually were connecting the HD radio exporters to the EAS equipment in the stations, and did some testing for them in Houston with four different radio stations. And this was the testing device, this little audio box radio here. So
yeah, I did the same thing, and I have the same radio. Those are cool little radios.
And they run forever on a couple of AAA batteries, you know, like days. So
yeah, basically they had a special firmware for the Sage NDAC, and you could send it. I vaguely remember how to do that, but I think the Sage would talk to the importer or the exporter or something. Very cool stuff, though.
Yeah, no, it was really neat. It's been a few years and a lot of beers since then, but you know, it was cool to see it happen, and it would actually make this little radio come on and play an alert tone when it did. You know, and everything. So that was it was neat. It's really cool to get to play with some of the early stuff. You know, occasionally But, you know, if I am recalling correctly, this was all done via TCP. You know, basically there was a hook into the Sage index, you know, with the HD exporters that got the information over to the HD radio equipment, you know, for the emergency alerts. And when we would do a test or, you know, an alert would come through, we would actually activate that function on this little radio. And I honestly don't know if that functionality carried forward into what, you know, what's going on now, especially with the stuff. It sounds like it's all part of artist experience, or maybe it's not artist experience. You'd know more about that, you know, Chris, but I have not seen that newer technology with it, but it was really cool at the time to be able to connect the devices that way. And there's a lot more devices than just that you can connect and control inside a broadcast facility. So all right. The software, I'd say vMix is a great starting point, because one thing I think a lot of people are aware of the vMix software. They have a website. I think it's vMix.com. I could be wrong about that, but it is vMix.com. And one of the things that's really cool about vMix, it's a relatively inexpensive but high feature set, you know, piece of software that allows you to put together things like this webcast. And it's fantastic. And they have an API where you can actually go in and execute different functions in their software to do different things, you know, switch cameras, you know, put a different source on online, you know, start a stream, end a stream, things like that. And you can do that all from the API. And the API is accessible a few different ways. The traditional, HTTP API is certainly one option. And then also all the functionality that they have built out for, the normal API, they have that, able to be accessed via TCP as well. And if you go to their, their help page, and you just search for API, you'll bring up a wealth of information about all the different things that you can do and remotely control with vMix. And that's something that I've actually put to work in a few different scenarios. Used it to do some automated camera switching based upon levels that were coming into microphones, things like that. It's really a neat feature.
I pasted that link over to Suncast if he wants to show it. It's a page full of text, but it shows the commands that are available. And if Suncast wants to pop that up for a second, just to show you this kind of help is available for quite a number of different products on the market, vMix being one of them, and perhaps being a very useful one. There you go. That's the page you're talking about, isn't it, Robbie?
It is.
So a person could what device or software might you be running, like an automation system, or what might you be running to issue these commands to your vMix system?
You certainly could use an automation system. You know, if the automation system is capable of sending out commands via TCP, and a good number of them are, you could absolutely.
Look at this.
And there's a Stream Deck. There are a lot of options, and you could certainly do it with an automation system. A product that I have actually done the most integration work with vMix and with is Pathfinder Core, which is a Telos Axia product. There is an interface inside Pathfinder Core where you can connect a generic TCP device and send strings of text to it, or be looking for strings of text to come through. And, you can send and receive information, you know, between Pathfinder Core and various pieces of software and hardware that way. And, that was one of the applications that I used. vMix, and it's been a couple of years, they have probably improved it since I last played with it. But at the time, the need was to actually smooth out camera switching for an automated means of switching cameras in a talk show situation. At the time, VMix had the functionality, they probably still do, where you could go in and just set up, you know, a number of mic input channels or audio input channels, and you could turn on this automated camera switching. But it was a little bit jerky or spastic because, you know, if somebody was off camera, say I'm on camera at the moment, but if you or Chris were to clear your throat or cough or just say something, you know, very short, their camera switching at the time, 2 or 3 years ago, would have switched to you. And then as I continued talking, would have switched back. And if we were talking in very short sentences, it would just be a bit hard to watch. So, you know, what I used it for was in conjunction with a bunch of silent sensors and delay functions inside Pathfinder Core. I used it to smooth out the camera switching and basically make it where someone had to be talking for more than, I think I set 1.5 seconds or 2 seconds before the camera would actually switch to them. So it became a lot less jerky and a lot more natural to watch.
And that's one thing I wanted to add too, is a lot of people equate Pathfinder with Axia and that allows Axia to do a bunch of things, which it does, but Pathfinder on its own is very powerful for doing those kind of automated tasks. So it doesn't necessarily require that you have, you know, Axia gear in order to use a lot, you know, some of these functions, because it will send HTTP requests and things like and act on them as well. So it's a very powerful way to automate tasks.
Yeah, it definitely is. And, you know, it's kind of funny that you mentioned that, because at the time that I deployed my very first instance of Pathfinder Core Pro, the current, you know, Pathfinder product, because there was an earlier PC/server-based, version, you know, it was in a facility that actually had no Axia consoles at the time. And basically, it was doing functions like this. Translating things, and one of the things that I ended up doing with it, and I've joked about this over the years and said it was because I was lazy. Certain automation vendor that we were installing a system for had just very robust integration to Axia, you know, GPIO, you know, to handle things like channel on, off, start. You know, controlling the fader buttons, turning them, you know, on and off in the studios, and making it a little easier to follow things on the consoles, you know, things like that. And when I was talking to this automation vendor about the deployment, the previous automation vendor had a pretty robust serial interface that made it possible to control things on the consoles that were in place at this facility at the time. And they wanted me to purchase a bunch of GPIO devices and wire all of this stuff up using old school GPIO. And I decided I am much too lazy for that. So I started looking for another solution. And that solution ended up being Pathfinder Core Pro. Because as it turns out, this particular console and audio routing system actually had a serial interface available, which in their later console products is actually available via TCP as well. But mine were older, you know, versions, and we just had serial ports. So I basically deployed some serial device, serial device servers that took the commands from Pathfinder Core, passed them over to this audio console and routing system. And what it would do is it would sit there. And every time, you know, the automation system would send a GPI low to an Axia interface, Pathfinder Core would translate that and then send an appropriate serial string to the serial device server, which would turn a channel on in a studio or turn a channel off in a studio, depending on what needed to happen there. And also, Pathfinder Core had the ability to sit there and watch for serial strings to come flying by. Or, you know, I'm saying serial strings because they were serial in and out of the, you know, the console system in this particular facility. But what it was actually doing is it would, you know, if you hit a button on a console, like say you want to turn on, you know, the middle deck in a three, you know, a three deck stack of output channels and have it remote start the automation system. What happened with this particular console system and others on the market, I'm sure, is it would send a serial string or a TCP string through, and it would be a particular one that lets you know that that on button had been pressed. So Pathfinder Core had what was called a watcher just sitting there looking for that string to come flying by. And as soon as it did, it converted it to Axia GPIO. And, you know, that relayed back to the automation system, hey, it's time to go ahead and start this deck, start the, you know, the stack, you know, playing again. And, you know, it was super useful. That ended up being deployed at a number of facilities across the country and saved a lot of people just untold hours of, you know, physical wiring between GPIO interfaces from a third party and their audio console and routing system.
Wow. You know, it's Chris, I'm reminded of the fact that this is something that computers are really good at, the tedious work of just listening for the right thing to come down the pipe. And,
sure,
it may be days, you know, and then finally, oh, that's it. Do something.
I've mentioned this before that, we use Symian, and that Symian, I think they've got an add-on, but they don't natively talk to Axia Gear, but we found out that Symian can send TCP commands. So we now do our audio switching within the nodes just because we can send those commands directly to the node to turn channels on and off and change routes and things like that. So, you know, same kind of thing as Robbie. I didn't want to sit here and try to figure this out. And so within a couple of minutes of looking through APIs and things, we noticed that, you know, the Axia, and in fact, I think we built it off of the template of the delegation switcher software. I think the author of that published the commands for the nodes. So we looked at that and went, hey, we can do that. You know, we can just send the command right to the node through TCP. So we did the same thing with that. And yeah, I mean, it's amazing how much of this stuff exists. I think the hardest part, and Robbie would agree, is just finding the API sometimes, because they're often just not, you know, because most people don't use them, they're not always easy to find. So sometimes you have to dig around or contact the manufacturer to get that information.
Yeah, a lot of the manufacturers publish the information, but a lot of them don't. And one of the one of the applications I was going to talk about, I looked online a little bit last night, and it may be out there. I'm not aware of it. But an application for this that occurred to me was actually controlling EAS boxes with serial strings, you know, or strings via TCP. I know for an instance like the Sage product actually has a serial device that you can buy as an add-on to the system and remotely control it. You could do the exact same thing, using the native serial strings, as long as you could interpret them. And, you know, sometimes it's not that hard to sniff that stuff out. If you happen to have one of those devices, you just connect it up to a terminal program and push a button and see what comes out. That's one way to do it. Another way might be to call the vendor. And in the case of that particular EAS unit, I don't know. That's not something that I actually did. I wired up all the control of mine, and I had some interoperability set up, you know, with that as well. But I actually wired that up with actual GPIO. To an Axia X node, it's definitely food for thought, and it's something that you could do as long as you can either get what those serial strings are, from the vendor of a particular product, or sniff them out.
Guys, we are talking to Robbie Green on This Week in Radio Tech. It's our 655th episode. Thank you, listeners and viewers, for helping make this a successful podcast. We've been doing this for about 14 years now, and I'm just delighted to be with you here just about every single week and try to bring you guests who are knowledgeable and fun and friendly and innovative, too. And Robbie Green certainly is that. So is my co-host, Chris Tarr. I'm Kirk Harnack, and we're going to take a quick break. Be right back with more from Robbie Green. We've got some more interoperability to talk about, and I know Robbie will have a few interesting surprises up his sleeve and things that, hey, I didn't know I could hook those two things together. There's a lot of that in our world today, and we're going to talk about more of that coming up. Our show is brought to you in part by Broadcast Bionics and the amazing Camera One system.
Camera One from Broadcast Bionics, designed to bring video to your audio content, visualizing radio and podcasts for social media. Camera One can automatically create, capture, and brand professionally switched video for live streaming or upload, making your production shareable. Control and configure using a web browser on any device. Camera One is available as a 4-camera or 8-camera system using the Blackmagic A10 Mini range, including the A10 Mini Extreme. You can use cameras to suit your studio and your budget. You'll need one camera for a studio wide shot and usually one camera per microphone. A standard multi-channel sound card or IP driver monitors audio from each studio microphone, and we work natively with Axia systems. Ideally, this will be a post-fader feed from each mic, although you can use pre-fade audio or a mic split if that's all you have available. These audio levels are used to intelligently switch the video feed when each contributor is talking. You can also group microphones together into one shot and use the audio from a mixer's aux bus. You can use Camera One's auto switch feature or disable it and switch using the on-screen buttons or the buttons on the ATEM. Recordings can automatically start when you tell the system you're on the air. This on-air indication can be linked to your studio's red lights via IP or an Avantech Atom GPIO interface. You can quickly browse all the videos that have been automatically created during your broadcast, download them, and post. Camera One is a user-installable system. You'll need a good-spec Windows 10 PC, i7 with plenty of storage, and 16GB of RAM. It's better if this machine isn't used for anything else. Remember, you can control the software in a web browser on another device on your network. Camera One, a thrifty way of creating scroll-stopping video from your show or podcast from Broadcast Bionics.
And you know Camera One's been tested as some of the best broadcasters in England, in Europe, and in the United States. It's a very cool system. Camera One from Broadcast Bionics. They're also the people that bring you all the different studio helper programs that help you get information on the air quickly, good social media integration, and the new virtual rack system that lets you install these amazing new applications that run as Docker containers. Well, virtual rack takes all the difficulty out of the way. It just does it for you. Check it out from Broadcast Bionics. Thanks a lot for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Hey, I'm Kirk Harnack, along with Chris Tarr, and our guest is Robbie Green. And Robbie, man, with so many different places we can go to and talk about this. You were mentioning remote control of EAS, but there's other things that you like to control, like profanity delays via TCP, either from Symmetrix or from 25.7, and some other things. What would you like to move on to next? What's interesting for you?
Yeah, those are actually two that I have controlled, utilizing, serial strings or TCP strings. And, it's definitely capable. One of the really cool things, you can do is link up, different products to light up or indicate the status of different things in a studio environment. And, that's one of the cool things that you can do with, this type of, TCP interoperability is actually, and I forget the syntax because it's been years, but I actually set up a whole bunch of 25.7 PDMs that were being controlled via Pathfinder Core. Whenever somebody would mash a dump button in one of the studios, it would actually send a command through to that particular PDM. And, what's cool about that, particularly in this day and age, we have a lot of, and this is just one application. We're talking about a profanity delay. But as we are moving into an era where maybe radio stations aren't being built in a one studio per station type configuration, you might need profanity delay to be engaged at a certain point in time or a certain time of day and tied to a certain radio station. But what if at other points during the day you were actually changing up the audio routing that was going into that delay? The delay has been exited, and maybe one studio is being used for two radio stations. One in morning drive, one in afternoon drive. But they don't necessarily have live talent in the corresponding day part, and they're sharing a room. That's one thing that this allows you to do in a more readily available, easily configurable way, is to change up the logic that's triggering various things in different parts of your facility based upon the needs of a particular studio at a particular point in time. Everything becomes routable in terms of GPIO logic, things like that.
Well, I know in Milwaukee we had a dump button that was on a light panel on the Axia board, and you'd hit it and it'd go from red to green to let you know that it worked, and then it would flash red while it rebuilt the delay and then changed to solid red when it was ready to go. So there's even things like that. And I do have a question for you, because I know in your previous life, and we worked together, that you went around and did a lot of implementation of things, and you went all over the country to different stations to do these things. What is the strangest thing you had to make or try to make interoperable?
Oh man, that is a really, really good question. And, I am trying to think of strange, I guess actually it doesn't really qualify as strange, but I would say the most interesting was the vMix, integration. I saw a lot of potential there, didn't develop it out fully early on, and then went back and developed it a little bit more fully. That I think was really kind of the coolest non-native integration. But the reality of it is, I can say one other one was integration to a call button outside a studio during the aftermath of COVID. Not every radio station has the luxury of having a receptionist sitting at the front desk these days. We needed a way to alert, the talent in the studio. So we actually bought a VoIP call box, tied it to a phone system, and needed to signal people in the studio that the line was ringing as well. So that's another possibility. I guess kind of the key takeaway is, until you really start digging into the products that you're looking at and seeing what the integration capabilities are, you don't know what you can do. There's a lot more out there these days than just the traditional GPIO that we all knew and loved and spent a lot of time with 66 blocks wiring up. There's a lot of stuff out there.
One of the coolest integrations I think I've ever seen and heard of is our friends at Broadcast Bionics are really good at integrating different things together and thinking about how people want to work together. And so they came up with this idea that I think Dan McQuillan explained this on one of our shows, that you have it's called the Bionics table. And it's a table in a room. It's got typically four mics and four headphones laying there, and that's about all you can see. Now there is an Axia microphone X node untucked up underneath there or nearby, and you go in and there's some detection, maybe from a PC, a hidden PC that can tell, Simon has walked in with his iPad, and the iPad has this Bionics app up on it. And so I know it's Simon. So I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to create a route. It does this through Pathfinder. I'm going to create a route to Simon's instance of his recorder back in the rack room. and I'm going to go ahead and you know, open an audio file. And whenever Simon, you know, pushes record, I'm going to start recording. And what am I going to record? Whatever mix of the mics that Simon asks for on his iPad. So it's you know, all the complexity is out of the way. It's handled by something. It's you know, pre-planned. And Simon just goes in with his guest or guests, and they sit at the microphones. And, you know, Simon can verify that his show's being recorded and sees the levels, but nobody else has to see that. And it's just on his iPad or on his phone. That's a really interesting level of integration where you're getting a recorder and an Axie X node and some routing to happen and being done through a product like Pathfinder Core Pro. That's pretty high level. There's plenty of other levels. You know, I go into transmitter sites and see, I forgot what it's called. Was it an Atom? That data module that turns data readings into TCP, you know, for forward power, reflected power, maybe pressure on a line. I've seen a lot of those now at the Empire State Building. I saw a bunch of those integrated.
So speaking of transmitter sites, but you know, one of the, we've talked about this a bunch of times is SNMP, and a great example of where that comes in a pinch is, I put together a transmitter site. I didn't have data there, but I had SNMP. So I grabbed a Max Connect, put it in there, opened up the port for SNMP, actually choose a different port for SNMP, and had the, Arc Plus look for it there, and immediately was able to have control of the transmitter. And I didn't have to do anything other than plug the transmitter into the network. So now what will happen is I've got fiber going in and I'll, you know, put it on a VPN or whatever. But it was, it took me 5 minutes to get the remote control set up on this transmitter without wiring anything. It's just, you know, plugging into the network and firing up a Max Connect for the data path. So, you know, we're getting to the point where even that is, you know, and Burke is a great example of something for interoperability because it has full control with SNMP. So anything, I was able to control, again, in Milwaukee where we had PPM encoders. If there was a fault on one of the decoders that said, you know, you're not encoding, it would talk to the Burke via SNMP and the Burke would shut the main off and turn the main on using a power strip. So, you know, that isn't even really broadcast transmitter stuff that I was able to control through SNMP. And so, you know, that stuff is fascinating to me. And I know, you know, and again, Robbie has just, you know, done a lot of this across the country with just things you'd never imagine could talk to each other. It does take a little bit of opening your mind up a little bit to these things because your initial reaction is, how am I ever going to make that work? And then you start to think about it and go, oh, you know what? You know, I think there are, you know, Simeon and Axie was one where I was like, I'm not sure. I can get Pathfinder or something. And it turns out where, you know, we just sat around and hashed it out and figured out a way to make them talk.
I got to believe that, you know, a show like this or your SBE meetings or maybe some online forums would be a great way to share this kind of information. We tell you, we got a sponsor break right here real quick, and we can actually use this sponsor, and I don't know, maybe as an example of some remote control capabilities. This part of the show is brought to you by Broadcaster General Store, and they are a wonderful dealer if you need something from Inovonics. I just recently purchased an Inovonics, actually it's an HD monitor. It's not meant to be a mod monitor per se, but we're going to use it a bit as such, not calibrated per se, but we can listen to all our stations. Let's tell you what, Suncast, if you've got that website, as soon as you got it available, why don't you pop it up? And there we go. So this is just an analog FM monitor. It's actually a rebroadcast receiver, but we use it to remotely listen to our different stations. I love this box. Absolutely love it. This is the Aaron, which one is this? 650? We've got programmed in our different FM stations. We can pick up most of our FM stations in the Delta part of Mississippi at this one location, and so we put it there. Sometimes, you know, you have trouble determining from your own staff, is the station on the air or not? Yes, we have remote controls, but it's quick just to listen and make sure of what you're hearing. And so I love this box. I wish we'd bought this thing years ago. It would make my job so much easier in determining, you know, hey, is the RDS working and so forth. So, Chris, Robbie, do you guys have any experience with Inovonics boxes, any of their monitors or stream monitors or mod monitors?
I do. In fact, that exact box that you showed there, I installed a couple of those. And they are fantastic. As it turns out, I live smack dab in the middle of the Western Null for one of the AM stations that I used to take care of here in Houston.
Of course you do.
And at night, that station just doesn't exist at my house. And so I actually used the AM version of that to be able to listen to the station remotely at night if there was, you know, any kind of a potential issue that I need to check on. And the FM version is great as well. And, it probably caught Chris's eye while it was up on the screen, the SNMP interface. I never actually played with that on those particular boxes, but I would guess they have some alarming provisions and things like that there that are available.
Yeah, I have one in each of my markets, actually. And I got a lot of brownie points from my coworkers for that because we were dealing with that. I mean, you know, my farthest away station is 250 miles away. And so, obviously we can't monitor that. So in each of our markets, I put in one of those receivers to monitor all of our stations. In fact, I have one in my basement right over here to be able to remotely monitor. And yeah, the SNMP categories are great because you can wire up different alerts for different alarms. And again, with the Arc Plus, you can actually have different people get different alarms. So, if there's silence, then I want that to go to the program director. If it's off the air, I want that to go to me. So, there's different levels of that sort of thing. But yeah, they are fantastic. Those Inovonics tuners, they are just a lifesaver.
One of the things that I've always loved about Inovonics for years now, they've offered, and maybe Suncast can show it here, this their main page on their website. You can go and self-demo a number of their products. They have them online, and they're live. They're listening to radio stations in Southern California, and you can go and you can listen to different things and play with the controls. Whether it's their mod monitors or some of their stream monitors or other products, just an amazing selection. Of course, where do you get these things from? Well, my favorite broadcast dealer, and that's Broadcasters General Store. Their website is bgs.cc, bgs.cc. And they're a great place to go to get incredibly good discounts, great prices. I mean, they got some sharp pencils. Ooh, look, there's the Rave radio mixing console. That's just about to start shipping from Angry Audio. There's some Axia Altus from Telos Alliance. I've put one of those in. I was just testing it yesterday, and more consoles from Telos. Anything you need. I mean, from television studio lighting to wireless mics to broadcast remote controls. They've got it at Broadcasters General Store. Love these folks, bgs.cc, and they're really good on the phone. They do good phone. 352-622-7700. That's usually how I call them up and rattle their cage. 352-622-7700 for BGS. And they and Inovonics, a proud sponsor of This Week in Radio Tech. So thanks so much to both of those great companies. Love them. They make our jobs much easier as engineers. Okay, we got a few more minutes here. Robbie Green is our guest, and Chris Tarr is along also. Robbie, I'm going to move from one topic to another here on integration or interoperability. You had some reference to broadcast tools devices. Hey, I'll bet you and me and Chris Tarr, I bet we've all been using broadcast tools devices about as long as we've been engineers. So what are some of your ideas on controlling these mysterious little boxes?
Yeah, well, the thing is, I've been talking a lot about GPIO wiring avoidance on the show today and everything. And it's something that I generally try to do as little of as possible. But there are times where you're interfacing a legacy device or a whole lot of legacy devices. And, maybe you need all of that GPIO capability. And as much as I would love for everybody to buy a whole bunch of, Axia GPIO X nodes, to bring GPIO, you know, functionality into something. You know, one of the things that you can do, you know, Broadcast Tools makes a number of different GPIO devices that actually have IO on serial. And in fact, one of their devices, they have a device called an SRC 16 Plus, which is, I believe, a 16 in, 16 out GPIO device. You can actually wire up four of those on one serial connection, connect it to a serial device server, and then have a lot of, you know, status monitoring for a very low price point. You know, or if you are needing to monitor something maybe in a facility where you don't have an Axia, you know, live wire network to connect GPIO Xnode to, you could put these out remotely, connect a Pathfinder core to it via TCP, you know, or a serial device server, you know, and connect that via TCP, and get a lot of GPIO status and, you know, information, or even control, you know, send closures, you know, things like that directly from your studios, you know. So again, another thing that you can do that, you know, maybe you'd always thought of that device as a way to get closures into and out of an automation system. It can be used for a whole lot more.
You've mentioned several times serial device server. And I'm wondering, yeah. Chris, and this question for you and Robbie both, serial device server, I thought you were talking about a PC with several serial ports on it, but no, it's not what you're talking about. Serial device server is a box that,
yeah,
TCP, you know, Ethernet on one side and serial on the other. What are some of your favorite boxes to do this? I just did a quick Google search. I see there are several out there. What do you like?
I was going to hop in. I'll let Robbie answer that question. I was going to hop in about the broadcast tools. What we ended up doing, which is really was, you know, really affordable, was we had a lot of these 8x2 switchers that we were switching audio and taking inputs from. Well, you know, we're no longer using the audio switching because of the nodes, but they work just fine for taking GPIO. So, you know, we left them in place and just reused them for doing GPIO from our automation system. And, you know, we just don't use the audio portion of that. So even if, you know, you're just starting out with this, there's a good chance you have something on the shelf that will work for this. And, you know, broadcast tool stuff takes serial commands. So that's maybe a good way to try dipping your toes in.
Yeah, absolutely. And in terms of serial device servers, you know, there are a number of different options out there. And you can actually, you know, get devices that have multiple, you know, serial ports on them. If you need to control stuff that's all over a facility, or if you just need to do a one-off, you know, control of a device. My personal favorite, the ones I find the easiest to configure, and they've always been rock solid, reliable for me, are from a company called Lantronix. The ones I've deployed the most are their UDS 1100 model, which has one serial port on it, and their UDS, I think it's the 2100 model. I might be wrong about that. That actually has two serial ports on it. You know, so those are the ones that I've used. And again, being the lazy guy that I am, what I will typically do, those come with either, I think, a DB 25 on the single port device, or a DB a couple of DB 9 connectors on the dual one. What I do is I get the DB 9 to you know, or DB 25 to RJ 25, you know, or excuse me, RJ 45, you know, adapters, and actually, you know, set them up. The umbilical between them becomes Ethernet cable. You know, so that's the way I've typically done it.
Cool. Okay. Well, thanks for schooling me on that. I've never used one of those devices, but now I'll put that in my pocket. And if I need to control something, serial is serial an ongoing viable thing? Or I don't think I've hooked up anything serial in a long time. What's your guys' experience lately with making things work serially?
I think it's mostly legacy devices at this point,
yeah,
you know, in terms of, yeah, you know, serial connection. But boy, are there a lot of legacy devices out there. And, you know, a lot of them you might not have ever thought about. Typically these days, you know, if a new device is going to come out, it's going to have Ethernet capability built in for the most part, if the manufacturer designed it to talk to the outside world at all. But, you know, in some hardened applications like industrial automation or whatever, you might not have that, you know, and it might be some other format. And you know, serial is certainly still viable. It's just not as prevalent as maybe it used to be.
Speaking of interoperability, some years ago, when my employer, Telus Alliance, was shipping the Axia Element console, there was a station in France, in Paris, and they did a dance show. And they needed, when you press the start button, 25 to 30 milliseconds of press start rhythm, you know, wasn't good enough. They needed it to be more instantaneous. So they went in and actually attached to the CAN bus to watch for the start commands from the fader channels that they wanted. And then they interpreted that, and rather than having to go through the Linux operating system in the Ethernet, in the Element console, and then interpreting that GPIO elsewhere to start something, they just made their own contact closure. And it had to be, they needed sub 22 milliseconds for the disc jockeys to be happy. And so they did that. That seemed like, well, okay, making that interoperability. But you listen to the show, which I did, and you think, wow, okay, I get it. Because they like produce a whole dance show. It sounds like it's multi-track produced during the week before, but no, they're doing it live.
That's so amazing. And, you know, I'd never actually thought about hacking CAN bus, but I've been in some forums, and there are people who do that with cars. They'll hack their cars, you know, CAN bus network to control various functions and things like that. I've read about that. I've never gone too far down the rabbit hole, but and I certainly will not be hacking my own car. But, you know, because CAN bus controls a lot of things on cars these days that you don't want to mess with. But it's out there. You know, so that's an interesting application for sure.
The CAN bus in my old BMW, I put the wrong light bulb in. So you put the wrong light bulb in. Error. So they have to make LED bulbs that mimic an incandescent bulb so that the computer's happy. Chris, on this interoperability, it seems like a few weeks ago, Chris, you mentioned some kind of wireless device that would talk SNMP. Would you remind me of what I think it was wireless? Would you remind me of what you were mentioning? Do you remember?
I don't.
Am I making this up?
I think okay. You might be misremembering. I bought an SNMP device that, you know, just online that I was going to use for transmitters, but that's not wireless. So I'm not sure. No.
I thought this was something that you place it out at the fence gate, you know, at the end of the driveway to the transmitter site, and it used some kind of, you know, lithium battery, and it would last 3 years or something, and it would transmit back. Maybe I read that somewhere. Okay.
Maybe you saw like a really, really handsome guy and you just assumed it was me.
That's what it was. It was you. Oh my gosh. Robbie, I think we had maybe had another topic or two here to jump into on interoperability. Oh, signage.
Yeah. And this is actually something that, I was looking into. I never actually got into it, but a number of the different digital signage platforms that are out there are able to be controlled via TCP. You know, so you send a command through, you might be able to change the look or branding or whatever of a radio studio. You know, where if you again are using the exact same studio for maybe the morning show for a country station and the afternoon show for a rock station or a talk station, something like that. You know, you hit one button on a console, or maybe even have a timed command, you know, set up in there. And it sends a TCP string through to your digital signage platform, and away you go. It can rebrand the studio. There are DMX lighting controllers that, you know, can accept commands via TCP. And if you had DMX lighting, you know, set up inside a studio facility, you can actually set the scene and do entire scene changes with the press of one button. And of course, you know, route audio, things like that under the hood as well, you know, for your audio console and routing network, you know, in like, say, for example, an Axia facility. It makes things a lot easier, and there are a lot of possibilities.
Okay. So down the road from where I am, down in Franklin, Tennessee, there are beautiful studios for EMF, Electronic Media Foundation, K-Love, and Air One. Gorgeous studios. And of course they switch brands. They use the same rooms for, you know, each brand, and they have these beautiful Axia Quasar consoles with the big touchscreen, and they're just all lit up, all so pretty. And then there's lighting in the room to match the brand. And, you know, the K-Love brand is all one color, and Air One is another color. And they've got all these LED screens all around the room. And not only have the LED screens, they have backlighting, the wall wash lighting behind these LED screens. And I was pretty amazed at how much they did not spend to do all this. It looks and sounds very expensive, but it wasn't that bad. And so Bill Jackson, who is going to be in Tennessee, talking on the same program as you, Chris Tarr, for the Tennessee Broadcasters NS Workshop. Bill Jackson, was trying to figure out how do I, you know, I can change most everything in the room with a couple of button, with a one button push, talking to Axia's Pathfinder. But the strips, the LED strips behind, you know, that wash the walls, he says, I can't control those. They do other things, like maybe via Alexa or something like that. And so he said, I figured out how to do it. You push this button, everything changes. And about 4 seconds later, the LED lighting changes, but it takes 4 seconds. I said, why? He says, because it's going through the internet, like to the moon and back, and it's using the website If This Then That to tell it to change. Does that sound kind of...
But I guess played with If This Then That a little bit for my home HVAC systems and things like that. And yeah, I can get that. And, you know, that's interesting. I mean, if you want to get, I don't know if they have like a hand control for the LED lights or anything like that. If you want to void your warranty, I suppose you could go in there with soldering iron and connect it up to one of those GPIO devices we were talking about earlier and control that via TCP, you know. You know, there's a lot of possibilities these days.
We've got our tip of the week coming up here after these messages. And maybe the topic for tip of the week is how to void your warranty. I bet Chris has done that. All right. Hey, we're going to take a quick break. We got a tip of the week coming up in just a minute. Our show This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by two more amazing sponsors. And I mean, these are good folks. One of them is Angry Audio. And Chris Tarr probably has some information about Angry Audio to talk about. Suncast, be at the ready. What is it?
All right. We're going to talk about the Rave console today. And this thing is spectacular. I can't wait. They're getting ready to ship them. And if you're looking for a small console for your studio, for production, podcasting, this is the one. It is inexpensive. And of course, it's built like every other Angry Audio product. This thing is a tank. It uses the Studio Hub Plus connectors in and out. It does USB. It does mix minus. Obviously, it has GPIO for on-air lights. This is a fully featured console shrunk down to a manageable size. And they include all of the interfacing that you need to make it work for whatever application you have going on. Of course, built-in power supply, none of these switching bricks that die. it has one of their really nice full power supplies in them. As you can see here, it's got mix minus on channels 7 and 8, mix minus outputs with talkback, faders for volume and studio, power headphone amplifier, really nice mic inputs, on-air indication light on the console, and wiring provisions to trigger outside lights. And of course, everything Angry Audio, they have just this really good industrial design with aluminum, in this case, etched markings, so you're not going to rub off any kind of paint or anything like that, screen silking, anything like that. It's laser etched markings. Again, you know, they're known for that kind of industrial design, and they certainly have got this going on here. They've got preview and cue inputs, or outputs rather. They've got program and audition buses. You can switch some of the channels between Pro and IHF, so no matchbox is needed. Just a fully functional audio console for, again, this is perfect for production rooms, for working in your home studio. And you're going to find out that they're very, very inexpensive. Relative, you know, obviously, you know, it's not $50, but if you compare it to other consoles of that type, it is going to be the least expensive. And they're also going to be coming out soon with a podcaster's version that contains some extra goodies, such as, you know, their on-air light pull there, that you can trigger that. So be sure to check it out, angryaudio.com. This is the new Rave console, and I'll just tell you what, it's going to go great with the Smooth and Rebel mic processors. So check them out online. Angry Audio, the problem solvers.
Indeed. I just spent lunch with that console's designer, Mike Dosh, today. He spoke to our SBE chapter. So that was very worthwhile. Hey, our show is also brought to you by Josh Bone's Max Connect. And not only are they Max Connect wireless, and I'll tell you about that in a second, but Max Connect now offers engineering services across, well, anywhere in the country, but they're conveniently located in quite a few states in the eastern half of the U.S. If you got a project going on, need a transmitter installed, need a remote control, total revamp, that all makes sense when it's done. You need any kind of work like that. Studio builds, Max Connect can help you out. They've got great engineers. They've been hiring people. And soon, if not now, soon they'll be offering tower services as well. Full insurance, lots of experience, the right equipment. So Max Connect, you need to check with them, the website maxconnect.com. But I want to mention real briefly their 4G LTE modems. As you, if you've been watching at all, you know I'm building a radio station in Oxford, Mississippi. Beautiful town. Oh, my goodness. This place is what a delight. And our transmitter site is really cool. It's at a cell site, but it's also the county water district site. There's a water tower next to the cell tower. And anyway, but we've had trouble getting internet there. It's been taking a long time to get the fiber turned up. We got the fiber pulled underground, it's brought in the building, but just have taken a long time for them to get that engineered and spliced in and an ONT and all that put in. So we were ready to start, working on stuff remotely, and we're doing it right now with a Max Connect wireless 4G LTE modem. That's at the transmitter site. It's handling, of course, things like our Wyze camera. It's handling, I've done so much updating to our computers out there. It's just amazing. And in fact, one of my colleagues at Telos Alliance remoted in and fully installed an Altus, an Axia Altus audio console and a Telos VXS containerized phone system. Did that just a couple days ago. Worked great. All done over the Max Connect wireless 4G LTE modems. Thanks a lot to Max Connect Wireless, and check them out at maxconnect.com. It's spelled funny. There's a link in the show notes. Appreciate you guys very much. All right. What were we going to talk about? We're going to talk about how to avoid your warranty. We've got just a couple minutes left. And so seriously, tip. Robbie, I might hit you up first if you can come up with a tip for us. On this topic of interoperability, what should engineers, keep their mind open to, or what's a resource they may go to? What should be inspiring for folks who want to make things work together that weren't necessarily designed to do so?
The thing I would just say is, look, if a device has an Ethernet connector, or particularly if it has a serial port, that's a pretty good tip. That there is going to be some kind of remote control there. And I would say open your mind and go beyond the traditional GPIO wiring with dry contact closures and such. Go there, take a look, find out what's available to you. You might be pleasantly surprised that, particularly if you have a product orchestrating it in the middle, like, Axia, Pathfinder or Pro, you can do a lot of things that you never dreamed possible.
Chris Tarr, Mr. Interoperability himself with SNMP.
I agree. I think the hardest part of this is opening your mind and thinking about, hey, I could make that work with this. The other thing I would add is don't be afraid to reach out to manufacturers to get information about what's under the hood. A lot of times if you explain what you're trying to do, they'll pass along a whole lot of tips in terms of, if they have SNMP commands or if there's serial commands, because a lot of times that's just internal and it's built in, but they don't really publish a lot of specs on it. But I found that they're more than happy to pass those along to you.
Good deal. I like that advice. And I got one little piece of advice myself, and that is just to keep your mind open to some interesting possibilities. A few years ago, we wanted to put RDS on the air, on some of our FM stations that were at a transmitter site, and we didn't have a composite STL shot to the site. We had LiveWire over an IP radio. And I had put off thinking about it, how to get our RDS data on there. Because remember, our audio processors and our stereo generators and analog FM exciters were all at the transmitter site. And then it occurred to me, well, wait a minute. We're buying some of these little Pura RDS encoders. They're going to need to go at the transmitter site. Well, duh, I can feed them their data over a TCP/IP connection. And it doesn't matter if that TCP/IP connection is in the same building or if it's 13 miles away across an IP radio. I don't know why that was so hard for my brain to get figured out. But as soon as I can give them IP addresses in the range that I tend to put out there at the transmitter site and tell my RDS Magic software just to squirt it out there. And it works perfectly. And I don't know why I had a mental block about that for a while, but I did. Thanks to Larry Fuss for encouraging me to think about this. I'd make it work. And it does. It works great. It's worked great ever since. Hasn't quit working. Love it. So we depend upon that link for our STLs, and it works great for a little bit of RDS data going along with it. So keep your mind open that the path doesn't have to be a 6-foot cable. It can be a 13-mile wireless cable, or it can be halfway around the world over the public internet. You can do things like that as well. Use a VPN. All right, we got to go. Robbie Green, thanks so much for spending an hour and a half with us here. I really appreciate you joining us. Thanks.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Kirk. It's been a lot of fun.
It has, and we'll have you back when you're ready to talk about some communication stuff. Chris Tarr, good to see you. I'm glad you took a shower earlier today. Thanks very, very much.
You're not the only person who said that.
Well, I just go with the flow, man. I just go with the flow. It's good to see you guys. All right, we got to run. Hey, in the coming weeks, we're going to talk about the LPFM application window that's coming up. Dave Doherty is going to end up being our sponsor on one of those shows. And a fellow named Jim Gilmore, who has revived more old equipment than you can shake a stick at. Oh, my goodness. Did you know that some Fairchild audio processors are selling on the internet for over $300,000, and Jim Gilmore makes them play again? Those will be coming up on some upcoming episodes of Torqued. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech. Thanks, Suncast. Bye-bye.